This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Some states are moving quickly in the direction of police reforms following the death of George Floyd. In New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo is expected to sign police reform bills that include one to release police disciplinary records. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins saying lawmakers have repealed an old state civil rights law that shields the public from learning about officer misconduct and disciplinary actions.
If there's smoke, there's fire. If you've got 15 accusations of excessive force, chances are there's something wrong in the way you're interacting with the public.
A U.S. Senate resolution shows Republican opposition to defunding police departments. The resolution was introduced yesterday, also calling for justice for George Floyd's death. And this is USA Radio News.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
There's an investigation now into reports of voting problems in Georgia's largely minority counties during the state's primary balloting yesterday. Residents complained of hours-long waits, issues with new voting machines, and a shortage of available ballots. Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger saying the problems in some counties were unacceptable, and his office will investigate how the regions can get things right before November's election. Summer 2020 will be a lot less eventful in Chicago because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Mayor Lori Lightfoot speaking after the city canceled all of its major summer festivals, from Lollapalooza to the Taste of Chicago and the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Realistically, we are not going to be in a position to have those kinds of large gatherings for some time. And it's heartbreaking.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
An interesting new revelation comes to light in the case of George Floyd and the cop who's accused of killing him. Here's more from USA Radio's Wendy King.
The former police officer that was charged with murdering George Floyd remains in custody, and a co-worker at the nightclub where Derek Chauvin and Floyd both worked says the two did not get along. Maya Santamaria, owner of the club which has since burnt down, described how Chauvin treated black patrons. She spoke on CBS.
Do you think Derek had a problem with black people?
I think he was afraid and intimidated.
By black folks?
Yeah.
Is it possible that Chauvin knew exactly who George Floyd was and that this was personal in some ways?
I would think it was personal.
Most Republican U.S. senators making it clear they're not in favor of defunding police departments. A resolution introduced yesterday calls for justice for George Floyd, but argues against defunding law enforcement. AMC theaters might be reopening soon after all, the company announcing that they do hope to be fully open worldwide by next month. The theater chain has been shuttered because of COVID-19, resulting in an over $2 billion loss in the year's first quarter. Find us online anytime. We're at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Why have thousands of aspiring authors teamed up with Christian Faith Publishing to publish their book? Because Christian Faith Publishing is an author-friendly publisher who understands that your labor is more than just a book. We provide authors freedom and flexibility throughout the publishing process, professional book editing, award-winning design, and some of the highest royalty structures in the publishing industry. And as always, you will retain 100% of the rights to your book.
I was looking to find a company that I could trust, one that assisted in the editing process completely.
The most important qualities that I was looking for was a publisher who is honest and upfront. No hidden costs or fees and owning the rights to my own work.
Christian Faith Publishing will publish, market, and sell your books in all major bookstores, online booksellers, as well as specialty Christian bookstores. Call for your free author submission kit.
800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. 800-978-4811. That's 800-978-4811.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
It's what we do and what we roll. Thank you for joining us. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. And we're going to spend this entire hour with our next guest, Brian Mark Rigg. He's the author of the book Flamethrower, Iwo Jima Medal of Honor recipient and U.S. Marine Woody Williams and his controversial award, Japan's Holocaust and the Pacific War. It is quite the study. And, boy, there's so much background on this and that, you know, we need to give it its full attention because you may have been hearing, of course, for me as a former Marine, when I first heard about Woody Williams and the Medal of Honor that he received and the controversy that came along with it, it obviously raised my ears to understand a little bit more of what was going on, because it's not often or at all that you ever hear of a controversy over a Medal of Honor recipient. And of course, for me, being a Marine, a former Marine, and considering that this involves another former Marine, is quite attention-getting and problematic on the surface. And I know it was for Brian Mark Rigg as well, a former Marine who has become a Marine historian, I believe, Brian. I mean, you know, you have been the one that is has been kind of the chosen one to really document some of this history and even to deal and, you know, to go in, you know, with some trepidation in discovery and researching, you know, Woody Williams's life and, you know, the whole process.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill, and thanks for that wonderful introduction and laying the foundation for what we're going to be talking about. Yeah, when I first began this, I was on Iwo Jima with Woody Williams to commemorate the 70th commemoration of that battle. And talking to him and finding out that nobody had ever written up his biography or that he had never really attempted to write his autobiography, I thought it'd be a good way to honor the Corps, good way to bring this history back out to the forefront again about Iwo Jima and fighting the Japanese Empire, by using his life as a conduit to discuss these issues. And a couple of years into my study, I went from, you know, being 100% hero worship and, you know, thinking I wouldn't find any problems. You know, I was just going to be getting source material to embellish and strengthen and support what had been, you know, reported throughout the years. And I found that this medal, you know, quoting Commandant Charles Krulak, the 31st Commandant, this medal should have never been given to Woody Williams. In fact, the Marine Corps of 1945 never sanctioned it, and it was pulled away from the Marine Corps by the president so he could have some Medal of Honor recipients. And the package was never supported by the evidence, even afterwards when they tried to get some more documents. So, yeah, it became a huge shocker and disappointment. And, you know, a lot of the things that the Corps was worried about back in 1945, especially under Lieutenant General Roy S. Geiger, and also Nimitz and both of their boards that looked at the medals, they started seeing that the evidence wasn't substantiated by the affidavit. And when you study it even more, you realize a lot of the information that got put into the original package was information that came from Woody himself, and it was information that he had embellished and had, you know, basically fabricated in many respects. So it was something that was very shocking to me.
Did you get a sense that Woody himself was marketing himself to be a recipient of such a high distinguished honor as the Medal of Honor?
No. I mean, it's a very good question. You know, when Woody, you know, to put this in context, Woody Williams is a hero. He served bravely on Guam and Iwo Jima. And as most Marines are wont to do, we like to tell our sea tales.
Yes.
And sometimes those sea tales don't match up with reality and the truth. And what happened is Woody performed some, you know, death-defying acts with a flamethrower on Iwo Jima and took out some positions and killed several Japanese. And when he got back to Guam, and he was one of the few survivors of his company, and he became one of the instructors of the flamethrower school, naturally a lot of the new replacements were asking him what's war like and what's, you know, what's it like fighting the Japanese and so on. And his story took on a life of its own, and he was just doing it to get credibility, you know, from what I can ascertain with his unit. And he liked telling stories, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And he's done this with many stories, and I document this in my book, throughout his life. And so he didn't do this to get the Medal of Honor, but the unintended consequences was this story through telephone took on a life of its own, got into the chain of command documents, and before you knew it, he was standing before Truman and getting the medal a few months later.
Wow. Did he share with you any hesitation or mixed feelings about me? Because look, you're awarded the Medal of Honor. I mean, how do you take that back? How do you cancel it? I have a sense that deep in his spirit, he's conflicted over this. Is he not?
Well, you would hope so. You know, with, you know, our code that we all Marines are raised with, if you will, honor, courage, and commitment. You would hope that he has struggled with this. But, you know, when you study the man, put it under a microscope, you know, a lot of the information that was put into the initial package, it was initially put in that he took out 7 pillboxes and killed 21 Japanese in one of the pillboxes alone. And the only person reporting this, when you look at the primary sources, is Woody himself.
Oh, wow.
Now, right before it went to Truman, since it was pulled away from the Marine Corps, they did have to admit, under Secretary of the Navy, Forrestal, that the evidence wasn't proven. So the first citation draft was totally redone, and all these facts were pulled out. And it's a very nuanced citation if you read it. But Woody didn't know this. And so for the first 21 years, whenever he gives interviews, he has perfect memory and recollection of what he did, and he continually touts the 7 pillboxes and 21 dead Japanese in one of them. Until 1966, when a major magazine called Man's Magazine brought out an article about him. Well, something happened at that time. I believe a couple of his comrades, and I have secondhand and thirdhand evidence for this, and that's very weak, but I believe it probably happened as the follows. Some of his comrades got in touch with him after this article and basically said, you know, stop taking credit away from the platoon. Quit shooting your mouth off like this. Don't tarnish the medal this way. And after 1966, Woody has a totally different way of handling the press. There's multiple articles between 45 and 66 that he has detailed recollection in all these numbers and all these facts. After 1966, whenever you read articles, he will say, people tell me I took out 17 to 21 one pill box. People say I did this. I have memory problems. I have PTSD. It's a lot of amnesia. So he changes his story to some degree. So whether he really has struggled with this.
Yes. Well, he must. Obviously, he must, because there was a shift there. We've got to go to break. We've got more from Brian Mark Rigg after this.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
You know what's really smart?
Wash your hands frequently, practice social distancing, and stay home if told to do so.
You know what's really dumb?
To ignore your immune system.
Right now, more than ever, your health depends on a strong immune system.
The experts at Immunocorp will give you their 7-step guide to immunity for life, free.
Why? Because we want you to be smart and healthy.
Simply call 800-446-3063 or click immunityforlife.com.
Immunocorp has been producing the world's leading immune system products for more than two decades.
To get your free 7-step guide to immunity for life, call 800-446-3063. 800-446-3063.
Be smart. Don't ignore your immune system. Your life depends on it.
Call 800-446-3063 or click immunityforlife.com. Immunityforlife.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Over the years, there have been so many people who have suffered from not having life insurance. It's not that they didn't care about protecting their loved ones. It's just that they didn't know why it's so important. If you died, how would your family pay the bills, the mortgage, let alone plan for a better future? This is what life insurance is all about. Providing for your family, even after you're gone. And level term coverage is the best option. It's not expensive and it's not complicated. You need 10 to 12 times your income in life insurance protection. And you need to call ReliaQuote. They represent 15 of the top life insurance providers. And their agents are experts at helping you find the right policy for your needs. Protect your family. Give ReliaQuote a call for a free no-hassle quote now. 800-478-0793. 800-478-0793. 800-478-0793. That's 800-478-0793.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
You must register to vote, and then actually vote.
It's our country. Bill Martinez.
Thank you so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media. You
can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
No, he realized he was in trouble. He should have stopped there, but he kept on digging a hole. You got to love him. Hey, welcome back. 19 minutes after the top of the hour, fresh and independent. We are right here in our conversation with the author of Flamethrower Continues, Brian Mark Rigg. Let me set the stage a little bit more here. We're looking at what was going on in the Pacific Theater, because late in the Pacific War, as they say, Americans were fighting their way to the home islands of the Japanese Empire. One of the fiercest battles of World War II was raging. The Japanese had created perhaps the best defended area anywhere on an island called Iwo Jima. Days into the bloody battle, casualties were high on both sides. U.S. Marines were taking an awful pounding out in the open from enemy fortified positions. You know, Brian, the Japanese knew that... this was it. I mean, if Iwo Jima fell and the Americans continued to get closer to the Japanese empire and the homeland, then it was going to be over. I think it's hard for people to really understand is the psychology of the Japanese soldier, which you bring out in Flamethrower. Help our audience understand how committed these Japanese soldiers were to the empire and, and to their emperor.
Yeah, you know, as I dove into this, you know, I've written four books before this on World War II and the Holocaust, and I interviewed a lot of Holocaust victims and interviewed a lot of German soldiers of the Wehrmacht, and I was blown away by the radical mindset that most Japanese soldiers had. They made the Germans look weak. In fact, I have a theory that, you know, thank God the Germans didn't have the fanaticism of the Japanese, which is remarkable when you look at Nazi Germany, and mm-hmm. thank God the Japanese didn't have the industrial might and tactics and the hardware that the Germans had, because if that happened, if that reversal happened, we may have not won the war. Now, the Japanese, to give people an understanding of these people, they had taken their, Japan is the size of California. They took over 1/7 of the Earth's circumference. They ruled basically 600 million people. Nazi Germany only ruled 450 at their height. And they slaughtered, in what I'm calling Japan's Holocaust, 22 million people, mostly Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know that. We hear about the Holocaust and 6 million Jews. But the Japanese were actively killing in China starting in 1927. You know, the Holocaust under the Nazis only really began in 1941. So they had over a decade more time to spread their evil empire. And these people were not only fanatics ideologically, but they were religious nut jobs, and they were actually serving Hirohito, who was an actual Shinto god in human form, and everything was justified in their eyes of taking out what they called gaijin, or non-humans or non-Japanese, and they were
the less than.
And they were just as vicious as the Nazis, and unlike the Germans after the war, who have paid $90 billion in reparations and have monuments all over their land commemorating the victims. Japan has paid $1 billion to their victims and has hardly any monuments in their land. And they deny this in their textbooks, any monuments in their land to the victims, and deny this in the textbooks, and they have behaved shamefully. So when we met the Japanese soldier at Iwo Jima, these guys had decades, not just 10 years like the Nazis did with Hitler, but these guys had literally decades from the 1800s mm-hmm. of radical ideology that created a fascist nation. And these guys were suicide bombers, down to the last man. They, you know, while many armies tout to fight the death motto, the only modern nation to do this was Japan. They had a 98% fatality rate when they went into combat. Basically, Americans and Germans in World War II, once you had 30% fatality rate in your unit, you surrendered. Mm-hmm. The Japanese never did that. And when they killed, you know, when I read a whole bunch of the German files, a lot of the Germans and the hardcore SS guys, they were having a hard time killing Jews. They did it. I mean, and of course, they were horrible with killing 6 million, but many of them struggled with what they were doing. They had problems with alcoholism. That's one reason why Himmler wanted to get more distance, and they started using gas chambers and using the inmates themselves to do the killing, because the Einsatzgruppen and the killing squads that went out and shot people were having a horrible time with suicide and functioning as, you know, soldiers and people in the Third Reich. So, but with the Japanese, when they went out, like the Rape of Nanking, and they raped everywhere. It's sick to read this. Mm. They raped everywhere. They killed. They cut off people's heads. They played with the body parts that they cut off in a Jeffrey Dahmer type of way, and they didn't care. Almost all of them didn't have any questions in their mind that this was wrong. So what we did in World War II of taking Japan down to their knees and preventing them from creating a carnival of, you know, horrible crimes all throughout Asia, you know, we need to really let our people in America know what our boys, our Marines, and our GIs did by defeating Japan. And then when you learn about this enemy and how horrible he was and how there was going to be no surrender, you really, it comes in, you know, going through all these archives in China and Japan and America, it really becomes very clear to me, oh, my God, yeah. Thank God we had the atomic bombs.
Exactly.
We would have lost millions, you know, taking over Japan. So, yeah, I really have a long chapter, thanks for letting me talk about this, Bill, about the enemy.
Well, I think this is so important. This is so important, Brian, because a lot has got lost in translation, you know, because there it was so horrific in the European theater, and we look at Germany, and to hear you, you know, describe the mindset and the psychology of the Japanese. Now, we do this, you know, with some caution here, because we have modern Japan versus Japan there, but there is a lot for us as human beings who are alive today to to make a choice. And this is why I'm so concerned about what's happening right now, even in our country, the dehumanization of people, this cancel culture, making people feel like they're less than. I mean, who gave anybody the right to reject and think that people are less than? Because if you start thinking that way, then you start having police officers lay their, you know, their knee on somebody's neck for an extended period of time, and he dies needlessly. I mean, this is a fellow human being. Or you have two people stalking an individual who's jogging, and you take it upon yourself to murder that person. I mean, this is an indictment on our current culture, you know, that I get concerned about. But you know, because if you're on that trajectory, then you think, okay, well, we're not as bad as the Nazis. But then, you know, you find out the psychology of what was going on with the Japanese back then. And this had been done over time. I mean, this is decades of indoctrination and the invalidation of human beings other than themselves. I mean, this is extremely dangerous where we are right now.
Well, yeah, you know, you bring up some interesting points. I mean, it's a slippery slope when you start saying the others and start dehumanizing people as them. But, you know, the beautiful thing about our democracy and what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and Benjamin Franklin gave us is that the ability to talk about this and to question our leaders and to bring out the information and freedom of speech is incredible. So although we have these instances that are horrific, most Americans agree these things should not happen. Whereas in Nazi Germany and Japan, this was encouraged. It was great.
Exactly.
Here's Don Schenk with today's global update from the Tide Ministry, sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ on the radio in 27 languages.
The negative effects of the coronavirus have been felt worldwide, but in countries where life was already challenging, the difficulties are compounded. In Zimbabwe, where the Tide Ministry shares the gospel over the airwaves, our partners report that listeners call in to voice their frustrations, pains, and prayer requests. Coronavirus-related issues are a compounding factor in the lives of the people of Zimbabwe, who are already struggling with hardships due to economic difficulties, rampant inflation, high unemployment, and the prospect of a low harvest because of inadequate rainfall. Fears differ from country to country, but the search for hope is universal, and Christ is the only solid foundation of hope.
For more information about how the Tide International Radio Ministry is pointing people to Jesus as the source of true hope in Zimbabwe and other countries, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Some states are moving quickly in the direction of police reforms following the death of George Floyd. In New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo is expected to sign police reform bills that include one to release police disciplinary records. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins saying lawmakers have repealed an old state civil rights law that shields the public from learning about officer misconduct and disciplinary actions.
There's smoke, there's fire. If you've got 15 accusations of excessive force, chances are there's something wrong in the way you're interacting with the public.
A U.S. Senate resolution shows Republican opposition to defunding police departments. The resolution was introduced yesterday, also calling for justice for George Floyd's death. And this is USA Radio News.
In today's world, violent crime can victimize anyone, anytime. When violent crime confronts you, will you be able to protect yourself and your loved ones? For personal protection training, there's none better than FrontSight, the world's premier firearms training facility near Las Vegas, Nevada. Learn firearm skills from FrontSight's world-class instructors, led by FrontSight's founder and director, Dr. Ignatius Piazza. Whether you're in law enforcement, the military, or a private citizen, after your first firearm training course at FrontSight, you'll leave with skills that surpass 99% of the gun-owning population, guaranteed. And now, you and your family can train at FrontSight free of charge. Yes, free. Go now to frontsight.com/radio to secure a $2,000 four-day defensive handgun course. Absolutely free with no catch. Enter FrontSight.com/radio. Act now before these free courses are all taken. Secure your free four-day course at frontsight.com/radio. FrontSight, America's gun training destination.
Lower taxes, less government, and self-reliance. They live here. Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're back with you. 28 minutes before the top of the hour in our conversation with Brian Mark Rigg, the former U.S. Marine Corps officer and historian, author of the new book, Flamethrower, it continues right now. Mark, wow, what a contrast here in thinking, you know, and I have to pause and consider for just a moment understanding the culture of the Japanese and their commitment, their religious fervor for what they believed in, and their emperor and that, and as you say, the Americans, even the Germans by comparison, if they lost 30% of their people, it was like, okay, we surrender. The Japanese were so all in that you said in many cases 98%, it would require that kind of defeat, and that must have been something that Truman was well aware of when he had to make the decision to release the atomic bomb.
Absolutely. You know, when we went in, I mean, to put it in context, Iwo Jima, we lost 7,000 men dead, and we had 19,000 wounded. So with these 26,000 casualties, we suffered more dead and wounded in 36 days on this island than we have in the last 30 years fighting in the Middle East, to put it in context. There was a lot of mothers, fathers and grandparents that were very upset about this. And when Truman got the information about this, just how radical they were on Saipan, killing their own citizens there, and how radical they were on Iwo Jima and the other islands that we got to, he's like, hell no, am I going to send my boys into Japan when these bombs might bring Hirohito to his knees?
Right.
Because you had 4 million regulars, trained soldiers in Japan, and you had an additional, depending on which documents you look at, an additional 20 to 25 million citizens that were in militias that were all willing to die for the emperor. In fact, children for 8 months leading up to what would have been, the attack would have been trained or were being trained to be suicide bombers in their little school backpacks, no longer having books, but having mines and grenades and bombs attached to them, and they were called Sherman carpets. They were supposed to run underneath the tanks.
Oh.
So you just imagine our boys coming over a hill, and all of a sudden these bright colored clothed little kids running over by the thousands to attack them. You can just imagine that psychological problems, and plus having 25 million citizens and 4 million soldiers having a 98% fatality rate. They guesstimated, best case scenario, 800,000 dead and millions wounded. And up to that point, we had only lost 400,000 dead in World War II. So we would have had double the amount
on both fronts.
On both fronts.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, this
no doubt Truman made the right decision dropping those bombs. That's the only thing that would have brought Hirohito to his knees, and it did.
You know, Brian, what's most amazing to me when you consider that that kind of rate, 98%, and the commitment they had to the emperor and their fervor as they looked upon him as a god, and they were that committed. It was like, wait a minute, how could anybody survive and be converted? How could people change their minds after being raised, you know, for decades into that kind of fervor and passion? And, you know, what would it take in order for people to, you know, to become reasonable and to become part of a constructive international future?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in many respects, the bomb helped start that. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the prayer I have every morning when I get up, especially when I was a Marine, is, you know, God, please save me from those who believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of these religious ideals they had that they were committed to doing this. And just like, you know, a lot of Islamic terrorists believe they have 72 virgins when they die, the Japanese believe that if they killed people and slaughtered them in the name of the emperor, they become gods themselves. So what changed it? Well, defeat was a big help. Bringing democracy to Japan was a big help. And Hirohito, after the war, this is remarkable in the history of religion, renounced 2,600 years of divine lineage. He's the first one in his line that became a mere mortal. And he told everybody in 1946, guess what? I was joking. I'm no longer a god. And it changed Japanese society for the better.
And, of course, reinforced, as you said, when the Japanese experienced the clear differential of Americans' treatment of them versus how they treated even their own people and the Chinese.
Thanks for bringing this up, Bill. I am so proud of our Marines and GIs. My uncle fought on an island right next to Peleliu. And so I'm proud of his service and so on. But when I know what he and his comrades, the GIs, did, and then what our Marines did, especially on Saipan and Tiananmen, you know, when they went in there and there was all these civilians, they did everything they could to help them, to care for them, to give them food. I have several stories in my book of these tough, you know, Marines taking care of little kids. And as in contrast to what Japan did, whenever they went into different cities, Shanghai and Nanking and Beijing, they slaughtered the kids. They raped their mother. I mean, there's this one horrible story of this Japanese soldier, and this is just an example of thousands of cases I read about. He's raping a woman, and her five-month-old baby starts crying in the corner. He goes over and smothers the baby, and then goes back and finishes raping the woman, and then he cuts off her head. That's how Japan treated societies. We, in contrast, we brought democracy. We gave them back their country. We took care of the kids. And I am so proud as an American of what we did after World War II. And so coming back full circle to your question, how do you change this radical fanaticism? You give women power, and MacArthur made a good decision allowing women to vote in Japan in 1945 and 46. And you get rid of this theocracy. Religion cannot rule. Separation of church and state, thank God. So religion cannot dictate how people should believe, and you give people some power over their own lives, self-determination. They're not raised in military schools and brainwashed with this ideology. Then you get the thriving democracy that we see now in Germany and in Japan, and this is a gift that we as Americans gave the world. And writing this book about our brother Marines and what they did and the cost that we suffered is something I take great pride in, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to write about this in a book and get it out there for people to learn about this again, because if we don't tell the stories, people will be forgotten.
Well, without a doubt, and I got to tell you, you have blessed me and other Marines and former Marines richly by the story, because this stuff has gotten lost in translation. You know, I often share with people, my dad was in the European theater. He was a medic in the Army with Patton at the Battle of the Bulge, and we heard little from our dad about what happened. And this is very typical of people who go to war, is they come back, they're very humble, they're reticent to talk about it. It's just an experience they kind of stuff away, maybe because it was so horrific or whatever. But these stories need to be told, Brian. And, you know, thank God for you and what God has blessed you with in your talents and gifts and commitment, you know, to be able to, you know, pass these stories on to us, because you have this sense of pride, you know, as a Marine, as an American, as somebody who believed in democracy at a time, especially in our country, when there's this, you know, this increasing interest in socialism. And, you know, by instinct that this is not right. But, you know, we need to have these other stories, you know, to come back and to tell and say, are you aware this is what happened? And this is why democracy took a foothold in the East, in Japan specifically, and why they are such a strong ally today.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one thing I was fascinated by when I did this research, you know, you and I are Marines. Mecca is Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And this battle is written about, you know, in several books, obviously, and we talk about it all the time in the Corps. What I was horrified by and shocked by is when I went to the personnel files in St. Louis, our National Archives, where all our military personnel files are, almost all the Marines I looked up, and many of them being colonels, even some of the generals that were active on Iwo Jima, Erickson, he should be more famous than Chesty, in my opinion, and I'm trying to do that with my book. These files hadn't been opened since 1945.
Wow.
And I can't tell you how many guys I looked up.
Well, Brian, hey, we've got to go to break. We'll pick it up from there when we come back. More from Brian after this.
Mortgage rates are at historic lows, and this is our lowest 30-year fixed rate ever. And now your direct lender, Network Capital Funding, is offering mortgage rates at historic lows. See for yourself. Our 30-year fixed rate is 2.875 with a 2.89% APR. Incredible! Plus, there's no lender origination fees or discount points. This is the best it's ever been. And now you have Network Capital Funding on your side, saving you money and time with their uniquely fast, simple, and secure process. These are our best rates ever. So call now to save. See for yourself. Our 30-year fixed rate is 2.875. with a 2.89% APR. Incredible. Call the experts at Network Capital Funding. 800-500, the number one, HIT. That's 800-500-1-HIT. As in home run. It's a grand slam to your best savings ever on your new mortgage or refi. That's 800-500-1-HIT or 800-500-1448. NMLS ID 11712. Visit NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Licensed by the California Department of Business Oversight under the Finance Lender Law. Number 603-D787. An equal opportunity lender. Rates subject to change and credit approval. Call 800-500-1-HIT for more information.
Packages start at $39.99 a month with signed agreement. Restrictions apply. Speak to a representative for complete offer details. See Vivint.com for license details.
Homeowners, if you're looking for the best in home security and smart home technology at a price you can actually afford, we have great news. You can now get Vivint's award-winning smart home security systems starting at about $1 a day. U.S. News and World Report has recognized Vivint as the top home security system of 2019, calling the Vivint system the best for a complete package of home security and automation, the best pro-installed home security system, and the best home security system with cameras. And right now, you can get Vivint's best home security and smart technology for about $1 a day. Plus, get free professional installation. Protect your home and loved ones for as little as $1 a day. Call right now for your home security consultation.
800-962-6082. 800-962-6082. That's 800-962-6082.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
With more people listening to radio than visit Google, Facebook, or YouTube, from the very young to the very old, everyone listens to radio. Pillow companies, alarm, identity theft, nutrition, insurance, banking, automotive, the list goes on and on. Billion-dollar businesses, why? The answer is radio, the media everyone tunes into. Find out how effective and affordable radio can be for your business. Contact 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com.
Values, faith, service, they still exist here. Bill Martinez, live.
Well, as you can gather, Brian Mark Riggs' book, Flamethrower, has been written, as he says, with much soul-searching heartache and many a sleepless night. He says, I hope you agree that it is far better to deal with uncomfortable truths rather than beautiful lies if we want to learn from history to build a better society. This is his motivation. Brian, we're grateful for this commitment, and as you're finding out, the truth comes at a cost. I mean, what you are sharing, even though there is some brass and generals that have supported your research and pursuit of the truth, clearly there's other people that do not want this story to get out.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately, you know, once Woody figured out that I had found out about his embellishments and how he had behaved as a young man and that this medal should not have been given to him, he slapped a federal lawsuit against me and used all his political capital. I mean, he's, you know, to fight me. And he's one of the most legendary Marines living today. He's 96 years old. He's clear the bell in the head. Mm-hmm. One of our largest ships in the Navy just was christened a few years ago, after his name, and then just was commissioned. And the USS Woody Williams is going out there. It's the ESB number 4, Expeditionary Sea Base ship number 4. And if my tonnage is correct, it has the displacement tonnage of 2 Titanics. I mean, this is a huge, huge ship. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, Trump has them at rallies. He was the Grand Master of the Veterans Parade in New York. So he is very famous, and he likes the fame. And, you know, he did sacrifice a lot for our nation. He deserves a lot of the credit that has been given to him. But when he realized that I was finding the truth, and this really illuminates how our heroes are made, and the first one to my knowledge to go into the actual case studies of these Medal of Honor recipients from Iwo Jima and analyze each one of them to get clarity of what was going on with Woody, he slapped a federal lawsuit against me. And, you know, I've won some of the issues, and some of them are still outstanding, but that's been crazy. And then with Kuribayashi, he was the garrison commander of Iwo Jima, and he was the most redoubtable Japanese commander any Allied command faced in World War II. He was brilliant, but he also was a mass murderer, and he was horrible when he was chief of staff of the 23rd Army in Hong Kong in 1941, raping and killing citizens and so on. And I interviewed his grandson, who was a very prominent politician in Japan, the Honorable Shinzo. He's in Shinzo Abe's cabinet. He's being groomed to be the next prime minister. And when I interviewed him and asked him a lot of controversial questions, and then when he figured out I was on to his grandfather, because I'm the first one to reveal really a full biography of this guy in the book and that he was a mass murderer, he had the embassy calling me up, putting pressure on me, was defaming me with some of my Marine Corps contacts and so on. And it was crazy. I was like, I can't believe that in a nation, two nations founded on the First Amendment and Constitution, freedom of speech and freedom of the press, you know, because our nation is built on that Constitution, and then we bequeathed that to Japan after World War II, that I'm having to fight for the freedom of speech and for the truth against two of these people who are supposedly defenders of it.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Well, And why do we do this? I mean, you hear constantly people say, so that this will never happen again. Well, you know, the thing about the truth is you got to get it all out. If you just cover it up and let it get calloused and it boils underneath, then the chances of it returning are more likely, and or it being pronounced. I mean, here we are. We live in a culture today in the United States, because we've rejected the truth, it's okay to murder unborn babies, sell their baby parts, and then we want to be aghast when people are abused and people are murdered in our streets, and we've become a culture of death based on a lie. I mean, you know, all this and this debasement that we talked about earlier, how you've debased your fellow human being, and this is what the Japanese for decades had believed in doing. Thank God, you know, they've done a lot to, you know, to eradicate that, but the fact of the matter is it is the human condition, and it really points to the capacity of our own human indignities, of how we can, you know, adjust our thinking to such a horrific matter, to rape and pillage. I mean, we talk about that. Oh, you know, they rape communities or they pillage these people. But, I mean, when you really stop for a moment and think about what is involved here, and as you said in this one story about, you know, this one Japanese
soldier killing the child,
raping and then removing the mother's head. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, but again, this is the human capacity. We're you know, and by the grace of God and by the freedoms that we enjoy in this country, the reason we embrace them so that we would not lower ourselves to such indignity.
And this is where you get dignity, I believe. You know, and I'm 49. I mean, the older I get, the dumber I realize I am. So, you know, this is how the truism I believe now. But where you get dignity is where you embrace the history of your nation and your own past, the good and bad, and you try to learn from it, and you don't sugarcoat it. And what Japan has done that is so disgraceful and actually a violation, I believe, horrendously to women, is that they participated in the largest trafficking network of women in the history of mankind. The average age of comfort women in their forced prostitution brothels was 14 and a half.
Wow.
So they were not only rapists, but they were also pedophiles, and they would rape everywhere. And we don't talk about this, and Japan doesn't talk about this. So like what you're talking about with, you know, problems and crimes and issues in society, the greatness about America, I believe, and Germany to the extent too, the democracy that's grown up there, you're able to debate this and talk about this. Well, in Japan, the government actually sanctions this, oppresses freedom of speech, and basically is fabricating the history. Shinzo Abe, the leader of Japan, says rape in Nanking did not happen, and comfort women did not exist. And he praises his grandfather, who was a butcher in Manchuria and was Tojo's munitions manager. So, you know, there's a problem here when you glorify people that are the equivalent of Eichmanns and Himmlers, and Japan does this. Germany doesn't do it. You know, if you had a German politician say, hey, my dad, Heydrich and Himmler, they were great organizers, which is what Shinzo Abe says about his grandfather. Mm-hmm. Those guys would never, ever get elected again in Germany. But in Japan, they sanction this type of behavior, and it's disgraceful.
Right. So the bottom line, and in summary here, Brian, as we wrap things up, we've got a little less than 4 minutes remaining. What do we do about Woody Williams? I mean, you know, you've done a lot of work here. You've exposed the truth, as you say. He's 96. He's not. He's probably not going to be around much longer. But
I struggled with this an awful lot. You know, because I had rose-colored glasses on for the first couple of years. I had hero worship, and I didn't. You know, I wasn't looking for problems with his biography. They just started, showing up left and right. I mean, he says his mother lost six babies. I can only document that she lost three. He said he only had one woman that he adored during the war. I found out he had two, and he was keeping one in the wings. I mean, I could go on and on about all. He said he was with one of his best friends in the Marine Corps when he died, and he actually went to the family and told him the whole story. I found out he fabricated the whole story, which was not necessary. Most Marines get more upset about that
right.
than when they hear about the Medal of Honor. The truth is the truth, and when we create heroes and they become public figures, which he is, they have to be accountable because they are in possession of our legacy, of our ethics, our morals, and our ideals of what proper behavior is. So whether Woody is 96 or 21, he should be, and he is now a public figure and a Marine Corps hero.
Yes.
He has to be accountable to his behavior and how he has carried that medal, not only for himself, which a lot of times that's the only, you kind of look at it, there's a very selfish angle he has,
mm-hmm.
but how he's carried it for the Marine Corps. I mean, the Marine Corps had 670,000 men and women that went through its ranks in World War II. 82 of them got the Medal of Honor. Half of them, well over half of them, got it posthumously. So only about 37, I believe, if my numbers are correct,
right.
survived the deeds they had to do to get the medal. So what do? We tell the truth. We use his life to tell the story of hundreds of other people, which I've done in my book,
exactly.
that have never seen the light of day, and we honor them.
Amen. And this is the thing that your book also, as you say, in honoring the Marines, I mean, throughout the Pacific Theater, but in Iwo Jima especially, what they had to endure, you know, as I shared with you off the air, is that in my conversation with several Medal of Honor recipients, they are so noticeably humble. And what they do consistently and very honestly is deflect any kind of honor for themselves. And it's almost you have this sense that the Medal of Honor that they wear is for all those others in the platoon or all the other men. And I think that when you consider what happened in Iwo Jima, anybody that went through that is deserving of high honor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I talk about countless cases because they didn't have their officers. You have to have an officer to put you in for the medal.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these, you know, units, the officers were dead, so they didn't have that opportunity. And most people I've documented a lot of Medal of Honor recipients from Iwo Jima. And you get that sense, you know, and this is where we come back to Woody, where we have a lot of problems. I mean, he wanted to be paid for his story. He wanted to control it. And when it deviated from the narrative he wanted, he got very upset. And so you start seeing that the humility was not there as much. He likes to be called humble, and he does. He says a lot of the right things to have that. But we see that there's a lot of problems with his compared to, like you were saying, with most Medal of Honor recipients, you don't have this issue.
Exactly.
And I found that. And that, and you see that discrepancy dramatically when you see these side by side, which I do in my book.
Well, to get the complete story, as it sits now, Flamethrower is available. Iwo Jima Medal of Honor recipient, U.S. Marine Woody Williams and his controversial award.
So you're wearing a mask every day now?
Yeah.
Where are you getting them?
Same website where I get my neck and body wraps, sunnybay.com.
Really?
And they're handmade, just like their wraps in the USA.
Oh, and good quality?
Oh, very good. These are disposable face masks, and they make cloth face masks, too.
Good price?
That's the best part. 10 masks for only $6.
Wow.
As a public service, sunnybay.com is now making cloth face masks by hand in the Seattle area and sourcing disposable face masks with level 1 protection at sunnybay.com. Get a 10-pack of high-quality disposable face masks for only $6 or choose a handmade, washable, reusable cloth face mask with high 2 layers of quality cotton fabrics. Supplies are limited. Get details and order at sunnybay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Go to sunny-bay.com for disposable or cloth face masks. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting.